Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 249, recorded May 4th, 2015. You know what May 4th is?
May the 4th be with you.
Yeah, and you know what tomorrow is?
May the 5th?
Yeah, that one's for us. Yeah. May the 5th be with you.
I think that's we might have talked cool. about that last year, but hey.
That's okay.
It's been a whole year, so
yeah, maybe people forgot my jokes. I can tell them again.
Okay. So, we're back.
Where
I'm
we
reasonably
gone?
Healthy.
Oh.
I haven't been reasonably healthy for the past 3 weeks
Yeah, we still did it last week, though, right?
Yeah,
we did a podcast
still did
last
one,
week.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I could look it up and see if that was a dream or not. But I think so. And we have a lot of contributors this week, a comparative lot.
We got Matt in Perth, Western Australia, and JR in Eastern Kentucky, and Jeremiah in, I don't know what those initials stand
Grand
for.
Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Oh, okay. It just said GRMI, and I'm like, well, I don't know what that
means. Gurmi.
Gurmi, yeah. Okay. Mick in the one and only Carnforth, UK.
Yes, so let's start out with Matt in Perth, Western Australia.
Yes, and he says, G'day, Aquarimax. I was just cooking dinner, listening to one of your episodes, when I felt compelled to send another email in. I bought 4 marine snails for my 54-liter/14-gallon nano marine aquarium. The glass was mostly covered in red-brown algae, and I wanted to see if there was a biological method of removing it. Wow is all I can say about these snails. I do not know their name, but I will find that out later. But the difference is massive. They've eaten 95% of the algae off the glass, and now the tank looks great again.
I love biological controls.
I know. Plus, it sounds kind of like official and clipboardy to say.
What does?
Biological controls.
Oh, okay.
Like, you should be wearing a lab coat and holding a clipboard when you say it.
Well, I could probably arrange that.
Yeah.
I remember having some marine snails that were quite good at removing algae as well. And the fun thing about marine tanks is that they have so many species that do so many different things. The cleanup crews are quite diverse. It's really fun. It's a fun part of it. So I don't even remember all the species of snails that I had either. But they were fun. They're fun to, and efficient.
It's exciting when it works.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He says, the only issue is a little bit of dried out drip markings on the outside of the tank. Which brings me to my question. How do you handle cleaning the outside of your tank? It is not as easy as it sounds, as fish do not enjoy friction against the glass. It can cause them a lot of distress, just like tapping on the glass freaks them out. What is the best method of cleaning the glass? I certainly have this problem with my 6-foot tank, too. So before he goes into his next thing talking about the 6-foot tank, let's talk about cleaning the glass.
Well, I found that the least friction is generated by a very soft cloth. And then I just rub gently in little circles around the tank, and I think it tends to work pretty well. I haven't seen the fish
vinegar?
Disturbed.
You spray with the outside with vinegar if it's got a stubborn thing on it.
If I do spray with vinegar, which I sometimes do, whatever I use actually, instead of being 6 inches away from the glass and spraying, I just hold it straight up to the glass mm-hmm. and slowly pump the handle.
So it gets
that
a few drips.
It sort of dribbles down the glass rather than sprays, because I don't want the overspray to land in the tank or something.
Right.
So I'll
could
do that.
You just spray the cloth too?
And you could do that as well. But I usually just do, like I said, I hold it right up against mm-hmm. the glass and slowly pump it so it dribbles down, and then I catch it with the soft cloth and do that. Because it does cause significantly less noticeable friction than like a newspaper or something like that. And I will use newspaper on occasion. It
Why does newspaper cause friction?
Well, it just, the soft cloth, mm-hmm. when you rub it against it, for whatever reason, it just doesn't cause as much friction. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's, if I thought about it, I'd know why, but I don't know. I'm not going to think about it. Just think about it, though.
Okay, let's just say it's surface
rubbing
area.
Rubbing against glass. And there's just less catching, I guess, on the glass.
Okay.
And so by the definition, there's less friction.
Interesting.
So it works better. I honestly hadn't really noticed fish being disturbed by using newspaper on the tank, and I will sometimes use that as well. And I guess it probably depends upon the type of fish. You know, a shyer
That's
fish will most
true.
likely react to it more than a very not shy fish. Like the goldfish don't care at all when I use newspaper. But I'm sure
the
some of the
goldfish are probably saying, "Wait, hold it still so I can read the article."
I wish that were the case. But yeah, really soft cloth also just allows you to polish things really nicely. I like that. Take all the streaks off. So.
Okay. So, back to the 6-foot tank. He says, "Speaking of the 6-foot tank, I am still planning its conversion into a marine masterpiece. This
Ooh, look at that. A little alliteration
there
award.
There we go. This one I intend to go full bore into marine land with clams, SPS coral, LPS coral, soft coral, and some fish. I realize the water quality requirement will be greater for these inhabitants. So, if you were to plan the ultimate marine setup, what would that include?"
Okay, before you go any further, I thought you were going to ask about what SPS and LPS meant.
Well, I was wondering in the back of my head, but I figured we'd probably talked about it before, so I wasn't going to ask again.
Well, small polyp stony corals and large polyp stony corals.
Okay, and what's a polyp?
A polyp is the little individual creature.
Okay. And why is it stony?
Because some corals produce a stony skeleton, like the corals you think about when you think about corals.
Okay. Right?
And some do not. Soft corals don't.
Soft corals are just, when they die, they're just gone?
They don't have, they're just soft-bodied.
They don't have any kind of skeleton inside.
Not a stony one. They have a hydrostatic skeleton, like an octopus does.
But it doesn't stay around after they
go.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So if you were to plan the ultimate marine setup, what would that include? And he says, "Right now I can think of a protein skimmer, first-class powerful LEDs for deep light penetration, calcium reactor, phosphate reactor, activated carbon, ammonia remover. I forget what that stuff is called, but it looks like the carbon, except it is white.
Zeolite.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Say it again.
Zeolite.
Like Z-I-O
or Z-E-O-L-I-T-E.
Z-E-O.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean?
Zeolite?
Yeah. What does Zeo? What does Zeo refer to?
I'm not sure, but it's
is that a brand name or is that
it's a
chemical name?
It's a well, it's like the it's a resin. It's the name of the resin. It's not a trade name.
Okay.
As far as I know.
Okay. Macro algae in the sump and an auto top up system. I'm considering using automatic water changes as well. There would be a container for the new salt water and a container for the old salt water. Then there are products out there that slowly remove the old and replace it with new. The advantages the advantage of this is I can make sure the water is well treated and at exactly the same temperature of the water above using this method. It is not feasible to attach the tank to the plumbing, though, so that is not an option. Thoughts?
Well, it sounds like a pretty killer setup.
Yeah.
I'd like to see it. I don't know what else I would suggest, really. It sounds really cool. And since reef tanks really, you know, you want to keep the parameters very stable because the reef conditions tend to be very stable in general, that sounds like a good way to do it by using a product that slowly replaces the old water with new water. Good way to make sure, and this then the auto top-up system, so the salinity is constant as well. Mm-hmm. And that basically uses a float switch.
Like a toilet.
Yeah.
Except prettier.
And as soon as the water level evaporates, yeah, much prettier than a toilet. Well, the top-up system itself might not be, but you don't see it.
But the inhabitants are much prettier.
Yes, yes. A lot of times, things like this they'll put in the sump, which is, you know, in the cabinet, and you don't really see it unless you open it up. And a lot of the equipment in a marine tank will go into the sump when possible.
Into one of the pretty stands and hoods, like Matt has already built other times.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would say this sounds really cool. I hope to see it. And nowadays, LEDs are getting to the point where if you're willing to spend the money for them, they really do. Mm-hmm. You can do some really cool reef lighting with them. You know, it wasn't that long ago and you really couldn't, but nowadays you can, but you have to spend hundreds of dollars to do it.
Well, they're expensive light bulbs.
Yeah, but they do the job and they last longer than most other types of light bulbs. They don't tend to lose... You know, the quality of the light doesn't, you know, like a fluorescent light over the course of a year or so, it loses most of the light output.
Mm-hmm.
But LEDs don't do that.
How long do they last?
Out or they're not out?
If you buy one of these expensive bulbs, how long do they last?
It depends, but the expensive ones tend to be rated for quite a long time, and a lot of the newer setups also are made so that you can take individual diodes out when they go out and put them put new ones back in.
Oh, that's nice.
Because like the
so it's Marineland, not all or nothing.
We've got the Marineland LED double bright on the Goldfish tank. Mm-hmm. One bank of white lights went out, and I contacted the company and asked them about it, and they said that's it. You can't replace them.
Ever?
Ever.
You have to buy a whole new hood?
You have to, yeah, the whole light fixture. I mean, I can use
that
it still.
That seems wasteful.
Because there's nothing growing in the tank except for Anubias. Mm. So it still works.
Yeah, but it just seems wasteful not to be able to replace the... do you call them bulbs when they're LED?
Well, diodes, I guess. Diodes. Technically, but...
You have to replace the whole plastic hood part, too.
Yeah.
I see, I don't like whole, that. That is, that's wasteful.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. The newer ones aren't like that. You can usually replace the individual diodes
that's
as they go out, or at least a bank of them or something. Mm. So it's better. Well, the main thing that I can think of is that it sounds cool. I want to see it. I'm looking forward to it.
Once again, we must apologize for background noise. I think our neighbors are having a birthday party.
We're with the neighbors, and it's leaking outside and dribbling down the driveway.
Yeah.
So, what was the other thing? I can't remember the other thing I was going to say, except for I hope to see it. And, oh yes, if other Aquarimaxers have anything to chime in with, then we'd love to hear that, and I'm sure Matt would too. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Matt.
Okay. So, let's go to Kentucky and JR.
Okay.
And he's been keeping us updated on the...
Citric acid baking soda do-it-yourself CO2 injection system.
Yes. He says, not sure what my last update was, but my last mix lasted 15 days. At least I'm moving in the right direction. Just mixed and started the new batch. This is what I'm trying this time. 350 grams of citric acid to 600 milliliters of water and 200 grams of baking soda and 200 milliliters of water. I just increased the citric acid over the last batch. I want to see if I increase the citric acid, will that make the reaction more potent, causing the system to need less citric acid to maintain pressure and therefore last longer?
Hmm. Interesting idea. Look forward to seeing how that pans out. I guess it kind of makes sense because it's not really the water that's reacting. You need the water for the reaction, but it's the citric acid itself. And so if you're including a higher proportion of citric acid in the water, you're basically just making it a stronger acid solution in the water. And so maybe...
It's kind of like a kickstart. It just makes it last longer.
Maybe. I mean, I see what he's saying. And it makes sense. It's a good hypothesis to start with, and I'd like to see whether or not it proves out. So, interesting.
It's good.
I'm glad we're getting this sort of feedback on the system. I do want to set that up someday. So
yeah, that would
it
be
helps
neat.
Me. I'm sure it helps other Aquarimaxers who are contemplating using it.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, JR.
It's time for that station break thingy. When I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. And Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan says, "Hello, Aquarimax. I haven't provided an update in a while. Russ had mentioned my aquarium looked a bit underplanted, and I agreed, but I've had some other expenses. Fun expenses, but expenses nonetheless. So I decided to try out something cheap. 1. I lengthened my siesta period to try and outcompete the algae. So far, this has had minimal impact. 2. I took some of the plants from my crested gecko tank and put them in the filter to add some nutrient sponges. 3. I got duckweed. I've always liked the look of duckweed. Kind of lends a magical feel. 4. I have reduced feeding to twice a week. I've noticed the fish feeding at old food on the bottom. It's difficult to regulate more frequent, smaller feedings for me because I have large hands. This should help long-term, and the fish don't seem to mind. Hoping these start reducing my algae, but if not, I will look into more plants. I want to try Amazon swords, but I'm not sure if my T8s are enough."
Okay. So, let's think about this.
Is this his picture that he sent?
No, that's Mick's picture. Somehow
I just got put
floated
in the wrong
up
place.
In the
okay.
Yeah,
it floated. We'll talk
up
about
in
that in a
the
little
formatting.
Bit.
Then. Okay. So, trying the siesta period hasn't helped a lot in this case. So you're looking at the other things there. I think taking some of the plants out and putting in the filter is a sound idea. A lot of terrestrial plants, then one of the bonuses is that they're getting atmospheric CO2, and so you can get some more efficient growth there as long as they're getting what else they need. So that may well help you out a lot. I've heard that works well for a lot of people. So I've experimented with it to a limited extent and can't really comment on it, whether or not it works. But it seems to make sense. It's basically the veggie filter idea. So it's a good idea. Duckweed, in terms of plant growth, well, you're going to get a twofold benefit there in reducing algae growth. One is duckweed is a nutrient sponge. It's a very efficient way to convert light energy into plant mass and also nutrients into plant mass. It's also going to reduce the amount of light that the lower reaches of the tank are going to get. But duckweed grows like a weed.
Hence the name.
Yeah. So you may find that you rue the day that you ever put duckweed in your tank, despite its magical appearance. Because I do rather like its appearance.
I think it's cute.
It is. But it is one of the, you know, it can really grow like
take
crazy.
Over.
And you can take it out meticulously, and all you have to do is miss a tiny little bit that's barely visible and easily overlooked. And then within weeks, it's back. All of it. It's crazy. But it may well reduce your algae problem and just give you another problem, a duckweed problem.
All you have to do is get some goldfish, period, and then just periodically feed the duckweed to the goldfish, because
they'll
eat it all.
That's one good way to do it, yeah. But you may have fun with the duckweed. Some people, you know, they really enjoy having it there, and like Kelly said, goldfish love it. If you do have goldfish, you can just feed it off to them, and when I want to get rid of duckweed, I just put a goldfish in the tank for a while.
Let
you
eat
it
all.
A tank where they will, you know, live. Put them for a few weeks, and they eat it all. It's gone, and then I can move the goldfish out. So I've done that. It works. Now, it might not work in your tank with the other fish you have in there, but anyway, it probably will help with the algae. And then number four, reducing feeding. You know, that's if you're reducing the nutrient load, it probably will help. And if you're finding fish eating old food at the bottom, then, yeah, they were probably getting too much food beforehand. So that's probably going to help as well. And like you mentioned, frequent smaller feedings. They're best for fish in terms of their stomachs. But in terms of the tank, if you are finding they're getting to old food, then you do definitely want to decrease them. So, there you go.
What about the T8 bulbs for
T8
Amazon
bulbs.
Swords?
I think that depends more on how far away they are from them. Probably be okay. They don't. They're heavy root feeders in terms of what they need down at the base of the plant. They need a lot of nutrient-rich substrate, but I've grown them in fairly low light, and they did successfully. They grew successfully, so I think you'd probably be okay. As long as the duckweed, you know, isn't obscuring too much. I would say always make sure that no more than one-third of the water surface is covered with duckweed. Otherwise, you'll have problems with your plants, your other plants in the tank.
They just choke them out?
Except for the really low-light ones.
Because they're shading them.
Yeah, they're just shading them too much.
Okay.
So, and that may come to the point where you're going to have to skim off duckweed every day, honestly. But, that's usually the rule of thumb that's quoted is one-third of the tank. No more than one-third of the tank should be covered with duckweed or other similarly surface-growing shading plants.
Okay. There we go. So let us know how those things go.
Yep. We'd like to see a video or a picture or something, too. Mm-hmm. If you get to that.
Okay, so we have Mick in Carnforth, UK. He says, just thought I would share with you a few pictures from our local public aquarium, which we visited today. One tank was around 6 feet tall and 15 long, with around 4 feet depth. This housed a couple of Oscars and other big cichlids, but at least 12 placos between 12 inches and 16 inches long.
Yep,
big
that's
ones.
That's where that picture is from.
Right, which we'll put up for you guys to see. He sent pictures from there. trip, one of which you can see his hand in front of the Placo, and you can tell how big it is.
Yeah, they are large fish. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, only one of them would open on the iPad, but we opened them on our desktop computer and looked at them beforehand so that we could see them all, and we'll put those on the page. They're really big Plecos, and they do look really nice when they're that big.
Mm, they're really pretty.
And big, like you said, mm-hmm. what did you say, between 12 and 16 inches.
Yeah. So, you know, a foot to over a foot. It says, all looked in superb condition, and it was really nice to see them at their best and active, not dull and hiding out as in most home aquariums where they get cramped up. I did manage to help a customer this week who had been sold one a couple of years ago under the information that it will not get too big in your tank.
Huh.
I had someone with a 450-liter tank who was looking for a good-sized one, so I passed their numbers on, and the 10-inch Planko is now doing well in its new home.
A win-win situation. Yay. For a tank buster!
That's a good idea. The animal room is going quite well, but slow due to busy work schedule. I have a breeding trio of ancestors in a new tank now, and a small group of dwarf half-moon guppies set up. More tanks to follow when I decide what projects I want to try. A friend has some Xiphophorus pygmaeus, which I might try and blag a few of. Bag? Maybe he meant bag.
I think he meant blag, although maybe he probably blag. Pronounced it differently.
Maybe so.
Because to blag means to obtain by wheedling.
You looked that up.
I did. I did. Because I wasn't familiar with the term. But it means that. So it'd be, in our dialect, we'd probably say, I might try and beg a few off of my friend. You know.
Well, there we go. Now we have more lingo for ever go and visit.
Well, I would love some pictures of the dwarf half-moon guppies. I have never heard of them. I know what a half-moon guppy is. They have a tail fin that's shaped something like a half-moon beta's tail fin.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never heard of a dwarf half-moon guppy, so I'd love to know more about that. And the Xiphophorus pygmaeus, that's a sword tail, but it's a pygmy sword tail, as you might imagine.
Oh.
They're quite small.
Mm-hmm.
They only get to be, I think it's about an inch and a half long.
Wow.
So they're quite a bit smaller than normal sword tails. In my limited experience of just seeing, I've never seen one in real life, but I've seen pictures.
Mm-hmm.
It appears that the males do have swords, but they're quite a bit shorter proportionately than a normal swordtail sword also. Not just shorter because the fish is smaller, but proportionately shorter. But they're brightly little colored fish. They're attractive little fish. And so I could see why those would be fun, interesting fish to have. They sort of remind me of least killifish or eastern mosquito fish, but much more brightly colored.
Okay.
And they're bigger too. I mean, eastern mosquito fish are tiny, but these are small too, just not quite as small. But fun little fish.
Well, so, neat.
Yeah.
And it's good you have a busy work schedule. That means the fangs and fin. I can't talk, sorry guys. Fangs and fins is doing well, right? Yeah,
business seems to be booming. That's good.
That's good.
Okay, so I've got a little bit to say of a few developments.
Okay, our next contributor will be Russ from Salt Lake.
Okay. Will.
Are you a new contributor? Should I welcome you to the show?
You can welcome me if you want.
Okay. Welcome, Russ.
Thank you. Okay. So what we've got, it's a little bit about Opaiula and related things. Lately, I've been talking about the setups that I have put, you know, a 10-gallon setup and a 5.5-gallon setup, which are the largest setups I've ever done for Opaiula, my largest previous to that being about 3 gallons, I think, three or four. At any rate, I put about 15 in the 10-gallon and about 25 in the 5.5-gallon and wasn't seeing a whole lot, and I mentioned that in an earlier podcast.
Right.
I recently put about 50 in the 10-gallon, making about 65 shrimp, and about 10 or so more in the 5.5-gallon, making the 35 or so.
Okay.
And that has made a very big difference.
They're more comfortable coming out now?
Yes, the shrimp are very much more visible.
More of them.
Like today, when I went to work, I walked in, and there were easily 20 or 25 shrimp visible. Just milling around on the substrate, swimming around on the rocks, on the glass,
doing
whatever.
Shrimpy things.
Being very, you know, engaged in, you know, searching for food and so on. Seeming very natural, comfortable. They had darkened up quite a bit as they're supposed to do, you know, coloring up, getting redder. And so I was happy to see that. And I noticed not just the shrimp that I purchased, but the shrimp that I had placed in there initially were also out there all.
Oh, good. More so active. They just wanted bigger numbers.
Mm-hmm. So happy to see that.
Yeah.
Also, a few days ago, I posted on the Aquarimax Facebook page a video of an Opaiula setup. I believe it's a 20-gallon setup. I could be wrong, but it looks like it's about that. And the substrate is entirely peopled with algae.
Algae is used to having people not trust it.
Well, this is the funny thing about it. Okay.
Sorry. Okay, I was paraphrasing a quote, so if you Princess got Bride. That, you get points.
Sorry, do I get points?
Or you get points, yeah. Okay.
So, in the tank, there were these algae globes, these little round balls of algae. They look something like the Marimo balls, which are a popular aquarium plant. You know, they grow in various places, including Japan and Hungary, to name a couple, strangely enough. They're widely spread out in certain lakes. And these lakes, because of the way the water moves, the algae grows in balls.
Like it just gets pushed around
mm-hmm.
because by the water.
It kind of circulates in a pattern mm-hmm. that forms the algae into balls, and they grow that way, and some of them get quite large.
And you don't actually know this, but the fish set up little billiard tables, and they rack up the little moss balls, and they play pool.
Yeah, but they're all green, so it's really hard to tell who won.
Yeah. It's okay, though, because fish can't count.
And they're probably colorblind. Well, no, never mind. Fish are colorblind like me. No, fish can see colors better than I can, probably most of them. At any rate, these moss balls are fairly popular. You can buy them at, you know, big chain pet stores and small pet stores. You can buy them online and so on. But if you want to keep them round, you have to periodically kind of roll them.
Because it's usually the water currents that are making them yeah. roll back up.
So if you just keep them still in one spot, they're not going to just stay that way indefinitely. You have to, you know, kind of pat and roll them into shape. And they can get quite large, okay? But the ones that I'm talking about are different. This is a different type of moss ball. And this website, the it's on YouTube, but the poster is from petshrimp.com. And this website specializes in Opaiula, but also has several other types of shrimp they sell, and several types of fish, and a few types of plants, and different things, some invertebrates, including other invertebrates, including crayfish, and a couple species of snails, and different things like that. But at any rate, one of the specialties is Opaiula, but in the Opaiula tanks, some algae balls began growing spontaneously a few years ago. But here's the thing. They don't get very big. They don't get big like the Marimo balls. They stay in a round form no matter what you do. You don't have to
pat them into shape.
But they stay much smaller, like marble sized, or a little bigger than marble sized. They don't get very big. And they just bud and produce more plants by themselves. You don't have to worry about, you know, doing anything to propagate them, and you don't have to worry about trying to keep them round. They just stay that way. And they grow extremely slowly, which is another bonus for algae, because, you know, so many types of algae grow so fast and you have to remove them. But this type grows extremely slowly. So I am really interested in discovering more about it and trying it out. And so I ended up purchasing one of these algae balls, and I'm going to try to grow it in one of my Opaiula setups.
As soon as it gets here.
Yeah, and it's already on its way. It shipped today. So I was pretty excited.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see how it works. It seems to me that this would be a good way to make sure an Opaiula tank is cycled, because if you drop one of those, then you're bound to be dropping in some beneficial bacteria along with it, and something else to help handle, you know, nitrogenous wastes. So, as the website indicates, the petshrimp.com, where they're sold, he said if there are a lot of them in a tank, he doesn't notice any measurable nitrate or phosphate. They seem to take care of all of that. So that's I'm very good. Interested in trying it out, and should be here in a few days. And it'll probably be a long time before it starts growing, because they grow so slowly, or starts budding before I have a lot of them.
But you can start it.
Yeah, might as well get a start and have it as something that I can keep along with the Opaiula. There are relatively few plants you can keep with Opaiula because of the brackishness of the water.
Mm-hmm.
And of the types of algae you can keep, some of them just look like algae.
Yucky.
They don't look particularly exciting or fun. So this will be an interesting experiment of a species. We don't even know what species this is. It might be a mutated form of a Marimo ball. It might be something completely different. They just, according to the webmaster and the poster on petshrimp.com, he just said they appeared spontaneously in his tanks. in one or two of his tanks, and he has just allowed them to grow, and it's taken years for him to have enough of them so that he can start releasing them. So that's a good sign. Algae that grows slowly and stays in a cool shape. So that's all.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.